Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now. A show for veterans by veterans.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program. The voice of the veterans, full of veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Tom Claxton, co-host Hollywood is out on assignment, but we are both veterans of the United States Marine Corps and we're glad that you have joined us to discuss the issues facing our veterans today. It's a pleasure to be broadcasting from the fabulous battleship USS Alabama. Here on beautiful Mobile Bay, we've got a great show coming up for you, but first we want to thank some of our sponsors. We'd like to thank the Battleship Commission, USS Alabama Memorial Park, Alabama Pipe and Supply, the Charlie Wilson Insurance Agency, the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly, Daphne's Hottest Place for Chow, the Waterfront Restaurant at No. 1 Yacht Club Drive, the Medicare Lady, Ms. Keisha Chambers, and Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens. And thanks to all of our sponsors and our great listeners. We could not do this without your support, so please let them know that you heard it on the Scuttlebutt. So it's coming up later on SBN. We'll be joined by Army veteran Troy Carrico, a frequent contributor to 1819 News Alabama, and he will give us his perspective on the conflict in Iraq. But first, it's always a pleasure to be joined on SBN by Ms. Genevieve Harris with the battleship USS Alabama and the Commander Freeman, glad to have you on board here, brother.
Always good to have you here.
Yes, I'm glad you took a break from your important endeavors. you've got a battleship Memorial Park full today. There's people everywhere.
It's absolutely amazing. First of all, what a great day to be here at Battleship Park.
Amen.
We have a couple of school groups here. As I spoke with Sean in the last hour, we talked about what our mission is. Our mission is to honor our veterans, but we have a 1A mission, and that's to educate the public, and it's always wonderful to see lots of groups, especially our school-age kids here.
Well, the facilities that you have here are in such awesome shape, clean, and you know they're well-lit in so many of the different areas, and you have so many of the areas open. A lot of the events that we see like this around, you're only able to go into just a few little places, you know, and they've got little trails through them and all. That's not open or that's not open. But over the years, y'all have developed a lot of the areas here to show the real life and the history of our veterans being on this ship and fighting for this country.
We have some amazing, amazing team members and volunteers who pour their heart and soul into this each and every day.
They're doing an awesome job under your direction, sir.
Thank you so much.
All right. I know Mr. Genevieve's got some exciting events that's going on here, this coming Saturday. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we got a couple things coming up on this Saturday. We got Living History Crew Drill. We have Dixie Division Military Vehicle Show.
Vehicles.
And so we have their Avengers Vehicle Show. That'll be from 9 to 5. And then Living History Crew Drill is pretty much all day from 8 to 4 o'clock.
Well, the Living History event that you have here is just really unbelievable in that you actually are able to let people, they walk around. I guess they get real close to the weapons that you have fixed up. You're not firing real rounds, but you've got them fixed with, I guess, with propane. That they have the same sound effects. They act the same as they would if we're in action, under fire. And then in most occasions, all of the people that are working the events are veterans, and they're all in the dress.
Yeah.
For that period of time.
Yeah, very knowledgeable, too. You can ask them any question they have.
Well, that's what I was noticing. I talked to some of them, what is this now? How does this work? How many rounds will this gunfire, And we can call these guns. These are not rifles. These rifles we carry in our hands. These guns are on board this ship. But you have, 16 big guns?
16, three turrets.
16 big ones, yes. Yeah. But give us a little insight about some of the things that will be going on with the event, this Saturday.
Oh, this Saturday. So we got, like I said, we have Living History Crew Drill. That's from pretty much 8 to 4. And then we have a call to institutions, call to battle around 1 p.m.
1 p.m. is when that occurs?
Yeah.
So it would behoove somebody to come on over. And you have an additional history here aboard the Battleship Memorial Park, and that is with the Dixie Division of Military Vehicles.
Yeah, and that's the vintage vehicles. That'll be actually in our picnic area, so they can kind of go around and see vintage vehicles and motorcycles, trucks. They have vendors that you can purchase merchandise. It's a really neat event to see. I enjoyed it last year when I got a chance to
those vehicles are, in most occasions, are stored back to original condition.
Yeah.
And if they were needed, they would be available to utilize at this time.
Yeah.
And it's like these high-dollar classic cars and high-dollar Jeeps that we have here when we have our Veterans Help and Veterans Car Show. A lot of them are driven in here,
Yeah, they are.
They're not. Some of them will probably be trailered.
But
a lot of them are driven in here, and a lot of them, as I say, are still in absolute good condition and working condition. They're very authentic. So if you came on board early, then they're going to be available at 9. So you could get a chance to see the all those vehicles, see that history there. Then you could come over and come through the pavilion and see all of the history that you have on display there.
And then around, actually in the pavilion, we have a tolling of the boat ceremony at 10 a.m. So you can come and see the ceremony. It honors the fallen submarines around that. So it's really insightful.
That's awesome.
We don't
see that too much. Our submariners haven't really been recognized a whole lot, and yet they're, to me, had one of the most dangerous jobs that we could have ever considered having, in service.
Yeah.
What do you think, Commander?
Well, it definitely, as a surface officer, I definitely respect our submarine sailors. What an amazing assignment. What an amazing task they had and continue to have out there.
Well, it took a special individual to even consider going into that branch of the service. And living and performing on that type of underwater, I guess you could call it vessel.
Well, as we call it, the silent service.
Silent service. But, and there wasn't a lot of tall people on there because of the, I would have trouble walking around this battleship myself. But there wasn't a lot of tall people on the submarines and all, and those people aren't given the respect, I think, that they really deserve.
Tom, I also had a chance to participate in last year's ceremony. As you know, I'm in my second year at the park. Wow, as Genevieve said, very solemn, very, very an honorable ceremony.
It is, yes. It is really unbelievable. And we're in the area of appreciative of you guys doing that and recognizing the submarines phase of it and tolling for those veterans as well,
Absolutely.
Yeah. But we were talking. I heard you and Sean and I were talking about the teak a while ago. It's really amazing that you still have some of that teak that is left and can be purchased in so many different ways.
Oh yeah, we have pins, coasters, coins. You can buy big old plaques. We've had people made shadow boxes as gifts. So
Well, we were able to utilize one of those with the Scuttlebutt Network. I bought a, Cal and I bought a 3-foot piece, and we cleaned it up and dressed it up and put a plaque on it and gave it to Panini Pete and Nick DiMario, and recognize them for all that they do for our veterans, the mess lords, and all of our veterans and all on here. So it's a pleasure to have you guys on today, and we appreciate y'all letting us come on board.
Thank you for all that you do.
God bless you and all that you're doing. You're doing an awesome job.
Thank you.
This is Tom Claxton with the Scuttlebutt Network. We'll be right back in a few minutes.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
Welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots around the world on scuttlebuttnetwork.com. And it's always a pleasure to be joined on SBN by our Army veteran, Tony Carrico. Tony, welcome back to SBN, and thank you for your service, brother.
You're welcome. It's Troy, actually. And it's you got my last name right, though.
Did I got half of it right?
You got it right.
Well, you know, when you get old, when you got old, we have these excuses,
it's
you
okay,
know.
Tim. It's okay, Tim.
Oh, Tim, okay. Thank you, Troy. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's awesome. You know, I'm just, you know, Sean and I talk about it all the time. It's just we feel blessed to be able to come over here and produce the shows over here. And I'm blessed to have Sean working with us to bring the Scuttlebutt show up from 8 o'clock to, you know, from 1 to 2 o'clock. But then the Scuttlebutt Network will be replayed. And it and if you're looking for us on the podcast, it's 106.5 FM Talk, you know, FM Talk. So it's there. We've actually got people listening in all different parts of the country because they have been reviewing the our websites and all and want to know how to reach us, you know.
Your reputation precedes yourself.
Oh, you? My Lord. I don't know about all that. Yeah, but that's the reason I'm hiding. But we have an event that's occurring overseas in our in the Straits of Hormuz and the Iranian deal, and we have all been watching this. Sean covered it quite thoroughly there a while ago. But in from the military, as you are and myself, we kind of go back to the days when this country started in 1774, 75, 76. And we had our own merchant ships at that time. And they were off of the coast over there in the Mediterranean area, and they kept sabotaging our ships and confiscating our ships, and they would sell the ships off, sell the merchandise, and then they would commit our crewmen to slaves. Well, but then they got real smart. They decided that they would not only just do that, but they'd put a ransom on them for us to get our stuff back and get our people back. So the brand new United States of America started paying that, and they're paying the ransom. And then they realized that they were paying over half of our gross national product and our revenue, and it was breaking the country. So that's when the U.S. Navy was started. So then by having the U.S. Navy and our Navy ships aboard the merchant ships, they needed protection. So then they developed the Marine Corps. And that's where the Marine Corps originally started. And that's on the shores of Tripoli. And then we finally got, I could use a different word, but mad about that. And that's when Tripoli was originated. We had just we went in there and cleaned it out and broke that crap up. Yes, the Barbary Pirates, you know?
Yes.
So we basically had the same thing occurring.
That's exactly what's occurring.
You know?
You know, I was, and I know I, for the listeners that were on listening to Sean, I've kind of got a different approach. Sean thinks, I'm a Machiavellian, all right? So I see the good in all of this, potentially. And one of the things I'd like to comment on is that as I look through the list of 10 items, I've made some notes. Thank you. I made some notes that are able to kind of guide us. Number one, I'm just going to hit them real fast. The U.S. commitment to ensure no further acts of aggression. They continue Iranian control, allow Iranian control over Straits of Hormuz, accept Iran's nuclear enrichment rights, lift all primary sanctions, lift all secondary sanctions, termination of the United Nations Security Council resolutions against Iran, termination of all international atomic energy resolutions against Iran, payment of damages to Iran for the losses in the war, for reconstruction, withdrawal of U.S. combat forces from the region, all cessation of hostilities on all fronts, including Lebanon and Israel.
That is not good.
Now, there's no grounds where you can actually tell me how this can be done. And listen, I say this. Sean made a good point that he doesn't like to see combat. Nobody wants a war less than a warrior.
No, we don't want
a war less than a warrior.
Right.
But this is at a point 50 years in the making, actually 250 years in the making, right? And we know for a fact that the regime that is there is a master of deception. They are insincere in all their dealings, and they're biding time. They're getting help from Russia and China. Finish the job. I wrote about this in 1819 News last week. Finish the job. And I'm telling you, the wild card here that nobody's talking about is Israel. They're not going to agree to these terms.
No, they're not going to do it.
So,
But I think Sean approached it a while ago about, you know, selling a bicycle and all. But
yeah.
From my side of the fence, I used to deal with different labor organizations
sure.
and all. And then, so then if they, at the time, they wanted, say, $5 an hour, just using it as a figure, then they would ask for $7.50, you know. But then if we were at $3.50 or $4 to start with,
right.
so that gave us a negotiating point.
I get it.
And I'm sure there are negotiating points in here that we would consider.
Sure, there are.
Under certain circumstances.
I could look at a couple that we won't.
But the majority of that is malarkey.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just really an item to give away, you know. To throw away when it gets down to the negotiating.
I'm to be honest with you, I understand and I agree. Somewhere in between can be met, but this enrichment of uranium. Now, remember, this is all based upon the premise that the IRGC, MOIS, Epizij, and the theocracy and all the members have said they do not recognize the right for existence for Israel.
Right.
They do not recognize them as a legitimate. They will constantly be at war. So I have some real concerns here. I got to believe the idea is there that we are going to try to see what we can work out, and we reserve the right to put butt-kicking violence on the objective should that be the case.
Right.
And I think that it's going to slip up. I mean, they're still launching attacks on the Gulf states. Kuwait's desalinization plant outside of Camp Doha got hit this morning. I mean, they've already shut down the strait again because of the toll booth thing. There's a lot behind this, including Lloyd's of London, which is driving a lot of the shipping issues risk and mitigation and things like that.
Well, you know that the Lloyd's of London, which is the number one insurer of all these ships.
Maritime, yeah.
They're going to double probably the rates. And so like when we have a hurricane here on the coast.
Yes, sir.
You can look for our insurance rates to go up.
Yes, sir.
You know, and that's exactly what's going to happen to all those shipping companies.
No doubt about it, yeah.
And then, so in turn, you know, that's, that's not going to fly.
I don't see,
how many of those ships can afford to pay $2 million passages?
Well, so I saw a conservative estimate about that. In 5 years, if it would hold at the rate it is, over $500 billion would be given, $500 billion to the Iranians. There's nowhere in the world where the Gulf states are going to see them getting enriched off this while they're building a pipeline to circumvent it, which they are right now. Look, this is going to reshape the entire petrodollar in the Middle East. So there's a lot of economic impact on it as
And
well.
I think the days of our $2 gasoline, we can forget it.
Let me tell you something, brother. This is just Troy speaking here. If we were the largest exporter of oil up to when Trump was in office last, the first term, and now we find ourselves dependent on things that are not conducive to our best interests nationally, there is no reason in my mind, and I can answer why there is, and it does happen, where we should pay more than $2 a gallon for gas. You want to help stimulate the economy? You want to put money back in America's pocket and back into business? You reduce the fuel rates.
Right,
I'm sorry,
right.
Brother. But the truth is, they're making all-time profit margins up at Exxon. I've been looking at their numbers. Listen, they would never allow that. They would keep it artificially high.
Sure, they're gonna keep it
high.
But
maybe there needs to be some consideration, and this is strange for me to say, of governmental regulation on a critical infrastructure for our country.
Petroleum is our livelihood. You know,
diesel,
we have to consider in what we're looking at now. I mean, I was in the trucking industry for an automotive industry for all my years. And when you start looking at $5 a gallon for diesel fuel, and all these truckers, and these trucks are only getting 5 to 7, 8 miles per gallon on that fuel. And everything we have now is shipped by truck because we want it so quick.
Listen, that's why your cost goes up at the grocery. That's why your cost goes up at the store.
Everything's going to go
coming
up.
Via diesel,
everything's
via diesel.
Everything's hauled by truck.
Yeah, that's right. Diesel.
So
the world to go around.
And without the trucks, we don't have a country.
Now, you want to bring this country to it? You want to bring this country to a standstill? You let the truckers go on strike, and I'll show you how that
works. We would be shut out immediately.
You're darn right. Three days of groceries. That's it.
So there's a lot of areas here then that are going to be very enlightening to us here in the public and when the people that have no control that how all this works out and what they negotiate. It's just the things that are going to occur, we have no idea now, and we're going like, you're crazy. That won't happen. But
You know, one of the things I also have some fundamental issues with is Pakistan helped broker this deal. I'm one of the few military people that have ever been in Pakistan. I was there with the massive flooding that occurred in 2011. I was there in Islamabad and down in up in the Hindu Kush area, and I can tell you this. They are not our allies.
They are not our allies.
And, here, and they're nuclearly armed.
But, you know, and here they are negotiating for us.
I know. Yeah.
This is Scuttlebutt Network. We return shortly after we get a word from our great sponsors. And without them, we wouldn't be here.
Hit a lick against what's wrong, or say a word for what's right, even though you get walloped for saying that word. Now, I may sound like a Bible beater yelling up a revival at a river crossing camp meeting, but that don't change the truth none. There's right and there's wrong. You got to do one or the other. You do the one and you're living. You do the other and you may be walking around, but you're dead as a beaver hat.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back. Thank you for joining us today on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program. Voice of Veterans for Veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing its shots heard around the world on ScuttlebuttNetwork.com. We want to thank all the fine folks that continue to help make this show possible. The battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, Alabama Pipe and Supply, our sea lawyer Colin Kimberly, and all the fine folks at the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly, Miss Keisha Chambers, the Medicare Lady, and Daphne's U.S. Eatery, the waterfront restaurant at Number 1 Yacht Club Drive, the Charlie Wilson Agency, and Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens. And again, we are speaking with our Army veteran, Troy Carrico.
Good job, Tom. Good job. That's all right. First time you got it
but
right.
You know what? I'm going to have to get on that guy that's AWOL today.
Yeah.
To see what he put there.
What did he say?
Tony.
What did he say?
It says Tony. That's what throwed me off.
You know what? Who was that? Cal? Did Cal do that?
Cal did that.
He's a Marine, so you got to give him
well,
a break.
Well, you know, he run out of crayons.
Three syllables is all he can
he
do.
He run out of crayons.
I know he did.
So he messed up. But it's a pleasure to have you back on board.
Always good to be with you, brother.
And there's numerous areas there that we could talk about what's going on over in our Iraqan area. So if you have an area that you'd like to delve off in, go ahead.
Yeah, I would. I'd like to say this. So I have a friend who I was in Rangers with, who works for a new startup called Citrini. They're up on Wall Street. They are a business intelligence risk mitigation analytical firm, and they're kind of leaning forward. And they actually sent an analyst to the Straits of Hormuz, paid to put him over there, got him on with some local boats, and they started driving around. And he says, what they're saying in the mainstream media is not necessarily true. There's a lot of boats that are moving through, about 15 to 20 a day. They have their transponders off, like Sean was talking about in an earlier segment. That's an option that they can do. But he said that it appears there's movement. Now, the nationalities of the ships they were trying to determine, I'm going to guess they were probably Chinese. They were probably Indian, countries that are viewed as semi-friendly to that regime. So interesting.
They're pumping money into that regime.
Sure they are.
And they're buying their fuel and their petroleum products.
And I don't know if you saw on the truce terms that they reserve the right to charge a minimum dollar a barrel. For each barrel that goes through the strait, average about $2 million, unless you're unfriendly to Iran, and they could be as high as $5
per barrel. Whoa. So the $2 million is not a concrete figure.
No, it's not. That's the starting point. That is the baseline for an average
full ship.
Oh,
that's the minimum.
That's the full, for a full ship, about 2 million gallons on air, so it's a $2 million. Then it raises depending on your level of perceived friendliness.
The world can't afford that.
No.
The world cannot afford that.
And it goes right into the coffers of the IRGC. Let me tell you about the IRGC. They have profited since the revolution in 1979. They control the black market. You get cigarettes, you get medicine, you get anything, quote, contraband to a degree. It goes through their companies, through their border checkpoints, and into their bank accounts. That's how they payrolled all of Hezbollah, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hamas, Hezbollah, all these organizations. And, yeah, I just don't see this as a, you know, remember what Winston Churchill said about America? He said during World War II, he goes, America will do the right thing when faced with a problem once it's exhausted all the wrong options.
Well,
so he was a quarter American, you know.
Yeah, we're working on that area now.
We're headed down that path. That's right.
But we really have no idea what kind of negotiations are going to come out of all of this. But it's it will be exciting to listen and watch and be able to pick up all the information that are available. Mm-hmm. And the computer programs and the computer information that we have access to now, it's just awesome.
So I did a lot of work in the intelligence community. I was with Defense Intelligence Agency while I was still in the military. I worked for a very spooky program called Gray Fox, which was part of the Great Skills program, which was part of the Army's intelligence support activity, which was doing human intelligence. And you can imagine what human intelligence is, running sources, kicking doors, you know, things of that nature. But anyways, what I learned was this, that today the amount of open source, non-classified, accurate intelligence you can harvest out there is very, very real.
It's very real.
You could actually put together a complete intelligence brief for some operation almost in any scenario with just the access to AI and the internet. And it's amazing. It blows me away. The amount of digital data that's out there that it's a part of a bigger puzzle of a military question or an operational question. It's very real. image from imagery to LIDAR to human intelligence, it's all there.
And we're not the only country that has satellites.
Oh, no, it's available to everybody.
We're not the only country that has satellites, and we're not the only country that is producing all of this information. But yet we have – hey, when all these people can get into their computers and all and hack these large corporations and hack the federal government, hack offices in the White House
–
you don't think they can hack just about anything that's on the internet?
So our major opponents in the field of like cyber war, and now I want to say something here. I was in 2003. I was a company commander for the 3rd Infantry Division when we rolled across the berm and we did that 4-day blitz up to Baghdad. I was there right outside the Battle of 73 Easterling. I commanded a Bradley Infantry Fighting Infantry Company, and I remember sitting on top of the track, looking out with my nods, and I'm watching tanks burn, just T-72s, T-62s. And I thought to myself, man, Russia and China is taking a note right now and saying, not a good idea to line up conventionally against the M1 Abrams and the Bradleys. We had air support. I knew a new paradigm shift was going to occur in military. I didn't know what it was going to be. I knew a warfare change was about to come. There's no way our near peer adversaries could line up like in Desert Storm. We would decimate them with the superiority of our equipment and TTPs, techniques, tactics, and procedures. Now, here's what happened. It came in the form of autonomous drone remote. That's the new phase of warfare right now.
Right.
I mean, think about it. Civil War, the War of Northern Aggression, as I like to call it. The War of Northern Aggression and Civil War for some other people. That was the first post-industrial revolution war where munitions could be produced at great rates. Lethality could be exported very quickly into the battlefield. Then it was followed by armor and trench warfare in World War I. That was the next phase. Then it went to air and sea power during World War II. Now we are on the cusp of this autonomous warfare. It's a cycle in combat of how things go. Gets tough, they figure it out. It gets tougher, they figure it out. And that's just the cycle of life in killing is basically what it is. So,
well, the capabilities of our satellites and what those satellites can do now. And the information that they can obtain. I mean, let's face it, we can see that and see that strength there by the way that they were being able to aim and control the bombs that were dropped in Pacific areas. Now, that being all this being said and everything you're saying, I'm a jarhead, I'm a Marine, so I know where you're coming from. Yep. And I was in the first Honest John rocket outfit. We had the
tactical nuclear weapons. I love
them. We had the first atomic bomb, you know, in the Marine Corps.
Did you ever get on it like Slim Pickens and woo-hoo, get a picture of you riding
it? I had a picture with me with a saddle on it, a 23-foot rocket.
I'd love to see
that picture. Thank God it didn't fire it off.
I know.
But all that being said, Iran knows that and sees that, so that's why they still want the nuclear capability.
You're right. And
that's the only way they could fight us.
They've been assisted heavily by the Chinese and the Russians in terms of targeting and stuff with satellite. But I will say something here. There's three things that make America's military might, when it's ready to really get its fangs out, superior to other countries. And that includes China and all their great dragons, stealth aircraft. I can tell you the truth. Three things that separates America exponentially from the rest of the world. One is metallurgy. Our metallurgy and our synthetic composition engineering is second to none. For instance, the Chinese have never been able to master how to build a turbofan without it eventually overheating and stressing. They don't understand ceramic technology like America does. Russia has not figured that out either. Their turbofans go out much quicker. So that's one, metallurgy. Number two, and then synthetic materials and composite materials. And then finally, electro-optical sensors and targeting acquisition systems. It's second to none to the world. And as long as we keep our edge in those areas, and master what drone and remote autonomous warfare is, we're going to be okay.
Well, I know it's drifted off a little bit, but you just challenged my mind. What do you think about the X-ray guns, the electromagnetic guns?
The real guns?
That we're talking about, but are they really real?
Yeah, they are. I have a friend that works for who was it? I think it was SAIC. They were involved out at White Sands with the Army railgun. very real. It requires a large enemy source, but we've been doing this for 30, 40, 50 years, I think they finally got onto something. We can talk about it next break.
And for more information, you can always check us out on scuttlebuttnetwork.com. And on the other side of the break, my tirade on sympathy for the devil. And more when we return to the Scuttlebutt.
Upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat.
Mr. Tom Claxton.
In all the faux outrage over the killing of the Iranian terrorist General Qasem Soleimani, you might have missed the fact that we lost 2 of our heroes in uniform this weekend. The 2 soldiers were killed when their vehicle hit an improvised explosive device in Afghanistan, where paratroopers assigned to the 82nd Airborne Division, the Defense Department announced this Sunday. The IED attack took place Saturday in Afghanistan's Kandahar province, which borders Pakistan to the south. Killed in the blast were Staff Sergeant Ian P. McLaughlin, 29, of Newport News, Virginia, and PFC Miguel A. Villon, 21, of Joliet, Illinois, according to a release. Both soldiers were attached to the 307th Brigade Engineer Battalion, 3rd Brigade Combat Team, 82nd Airborne Division out of Fort Bragg, North Carolina. I hope that the irony of this event is not lost on the communist Democrats and Trump haters out there, that 2 members of the 82nd Airborne were killed just days after their fellow soldiers were deployed to Kuwait as part of our quick reaction force in response to heightened tensions with Iran, and they were killed by an IED, which was the calling card of murderer Soleimani. As I mentioned in last week's tirade on American First, McLaughlin, who joined the Army in 2012, leaves behind a wife and 4 children, while Villon joined in 2018 and survived by his mother and father. Now, I spent a fair amount of time trying to keep up with the news, especially when it comes to our military and veterans. Yet, I have not been able to find hand-wringing Chuck and Nancy or their Democratic communist thrones over the deaths of these 2 American heroes, which is a stark contrast to the beatification that the left wanted to bestow upon the very evil Soleimani. Even George Stephanopoulos, heartily conservative Trump supporter, felt the need to challenge the speaker on her support for the protesters in Iran trying to overthrow the hardline mullahs that have run that country since the 1979 takeover by Muslim extremists. Here is the Botox beauty in her own words from the ABC's This Week with Little Georgie.
We're seeing now demonstrations in the streets of Iran against the regime. Do you support those protesters, and would it be a good thing if they brought the regime down?
Well, the protesters are protesting, as I understand it, this brand of protesters, about the fact that that plane went down. And many students were on that plane, and these are largely students in the street. I think the Iranians should have not had commercial flights going off when there
They're calling at the regime for lying. They're saying death to Khamenei as well.
No, well, whatever it is. But the fact is this, there were protesters in the streets before against the regime. After the taking out of Soleimani, there were protesters in the street joined together, as you know, against us. That wasn't good. Taking down this plane is a terrible, terrible tragedy, and they should be held accountable for letting commercial flights go at a time that was so dangerous. But there are different reasons why people are in the street. Of course, we would love to see the aspirations of the people of Iran realized with a better situation there. But escalating the situation, unless we've exhausted every other remedy.
Which we haven't?
Well, we don't know that. And if the first action to be taken on the threat of... there are a lot of bad actors who are doing bad things and threatening bad things to us. We know that, Iran being one of them, and it being a its proxies doing bad things to our interest throughout the world. But how do we deal with that in a way that calms rather than escalates?
Now, don't get me wrong. Anyone who has listened to SBN for a few minutes should know that I am no fan of Nancy Pelosi. I believe that she is a vapid hairhead whose Botox injections have seeped into her cranium. How she can think that her comments were in any way coherent are beyond belief. And yet, here she is, the third in line to the presidency, blathering on about just which protesters were out on the streets in Tehran, even though it was widely evident that they were shouting death to the regime and the current Ayatollah Khomeini. The fact that her greatest excuse for not coming out in support of those yearning for freedom under the dictatorial mullahs was that somehow she didn't have all of the facts further demonstrated her lack of intellectual honesty. Either she has failed to receive intelligence briefings that she is privileged to, or she was too busy hitting the cocktail fundraising circuit to remember. I mean, come on. At least Obama, Curry, and the Hildebeest blamed protests on a video that no one had ever seen in order to lie to the American people about Benghazi.
With all due respect, the fact is we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make?
Reality is that she is so desperate to remove Trump from office that he could successfully overturn the Iranian regime and replace it with a peaceful democracy, that she would accuse him of stifling the religious freedom of the Islamic terrorist mullahs. Make no mistake about it. Pelosi, Schumer, Schiff, the squad, and their ilk on the left have no real plan to improve America or promote safety and security in the world. All they care about in the end is power, their own damn power. They care not for the average men and women of this nation, even less for our men and women in uniform. They will stop at nothing to destroy this president and his legacy. The Russian investigation, the attacks on his family, the phony impeachment, the constant labeling of Trump as racist, bigot, homophobe, misogynist, and WASP, among other things, are evidence of their guttural, irrational hatred for a duly elected president. What is most galling is that every time they attack President Trump, they also attack each of the red-blooded patriots who support him. I believe that in their blind rage, they have allowed themselves to fall victim to the old axiom that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. This is certainly apparent in the ongoing story of Iran. In other words and actions, Speaker Pelosi and her communist-leaning drones have aligned themselves with the hardliner mullahs in Iran over the people seeking freedom, including patriots such as you and me. I only hope that they realize that they are laying down with the devil in the process, and that is a deal that hardly works out in your favor in the end. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Flexner. I guess you could say they have sympathy for the devil.
And welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Radio program. I hope you enjoyed our little scenario there. This is actually occurred in Trump's first presidency, but we're still fighting the same thing, fighting the same people over the same ideas and projections of how to live life and how to control our people. So this is not something new by any means, and you know, this goes back, back to what, 79?
Well, today's modern iteration is 79, but it goes back 250 plus years.
Yeah, it goes back over 250 years. Yeah. That's where we originated our U.S. Navy. We originated
the Marine Corps,
just for this particular.
Battle born from that. And, you know, Tom, the bigger question is this. Nobody wants to talk about it. It's the 6,000-pound gorilla sitting in the room, Islam in general in the West.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, they are Shia, which is a different brand, but it doesn't matter. If you know anything about taqiyya, which is the idea that as a Muslim and you're living amongst infidels, you wait till your numbers are right, then you overthrow.
Then you overthrow.
So this is a greater fight here. This is a existential threat of Greco-Roman, white Western culture and Christendom versus the savage.
Amen.
There you go.
I'm on that page, brother.
I'm a crusader. Poor soldier of Christ.
Yes. It's been a real pleasure having you on board
today. I love having
you.
Thank you, ma'am. Yeah.
We've had you on numerous occasions with the Admiral and our fabulous Sergeant Major Brian Pataglio. What a blessing.
Sergeant Major Batts, we love you. Yeah, and if I could, if you want to follow me, I write for 1819 News regularly now. I'm now a regular contributor, a weekly with them. You can find me on 1819 News, Troy Carrico, T-R-O-Y-C-A-R-I-C-O. And you can find me on X at Carrico Troy, C-A-R-I-C-O-T-R-O-Y. And on Substack, which is really growing big time, is at Blackbird Deuce. That's B-L-A-C-K-B-I-R-D-D-E-U-C-E.
So Blackbird Deuce.
Blackbird Deuce. That was my call sign when I was in the Rangers.
All right. So then how many years in the Rangers?
I did
an eternity.
I did 23 years in the U.S. Army. I was a young platoon leader at Fort Lewis, Washington. Well, I was never there. I was always deployed, but second bat. I was second bat, Company D, first platoon. And that was 2.5 years at Ranger Bat.
All right. Well, it's a pleasure having you on board. You're very knowledgeable, and we're looking forward to being able to read some of your articles on 1819.
I'm looking forward to hearing what else you got going on. I'll see you at the next South Alabama Veterans Council.
And we enjoy having you there. I know you've spoken there for
our
group on several occasions. We're the largest veterans group organization on the coast.
You guys are the gold standard in Alabama for veterans. I say that, and I mean that.
Well, what about your new unit up in the Montgomery River?
We had 87 people at the last meeting. That's big, and it's growing. We're outgrowing the space that we're in, which is a banquet room at a Chinese buffet. So we're moving on. We've got to find a Greek restaurant or something with a banquet room. Anyway, that's what's up.
Like us, you know, where you could put a whole bunch
of
people.
Admiral loves those crab legs. I can tell you that much.
Thank you for being on board with us today.
Thank you, brother.
And that brings us to the close of today's edition of the Scuttlebutt Radio Program, Voice of Veterans for Veterans. Remember, hero is not a four-letter word. Hoorah!